The water hole was literally that. A hole in the rock where water bubbled up in what was more a large puddle than a pool. Gan made it to the little pond first and knelt, tipping forward on its short arms to dunk its head underwater. It came up sputtering and then bent and slurped at the water like a, well, a dog. Or a wolf. Lily looked at Rule. He would have drunk his fill when he found the waterhole. Now he lay nearby, his eyes open but head drooping.
Oh, he's exhausted. Has more time passed than I know? There's something else affecting him. How long have we been walking?
According to whose clock? Time's more erratic here than you're used to.
Time doesn't change. That just... it doesn't make sense.
It does here, though around you it might operate more the way you're used to. I'm not sure how things work around a sensitive.
Take a guess about how long we've been walking based on your own clock.
Oh, maybe one of your days. I told you the zone wasn't far.
Then Rule's exhaustion made sense, she thought, relieved. He'd probably covered twice as much territory as she had, and it had been a long time since he slept. Maybe he'd been awake for a long time before they arrived here, too. That was a disconcerting thought, stretching as it did into a past she couldn't claim. She felt jealous, she realized. Jealous of Rule for possessing what she'd lost. Jealous even of herself. The self who didn't exist anymore, except in the memories of others. Of course, if Rule had been awake a long time, so had she.
I'm not sleepy.
You're still charged up with Emu. It lasts a lot longer than the kind of meals you're used to. Once it runs low, you might get sleepy. Or mean. Or hungry. Or you might just keel over.
You don't know?
The only humans I know about who've taken Emu were possessed. It's probably different if you don't have a demon in you.
But she was tied to one. The one currently blocking her way. She stepped around it so she could wash the dust from her throat. Gan shoved her back.
Hey!
You've gotta look first. You see that?
Now that it was pointed out, she did. A small vine thrust out of a fissure in the stone right where she'd been about to step. Pale and leafless, it looked more like an albino worm than a plant.
So?
So why do you think we've been avoiding those things?
I don't know. I asked, but you just hushed me.
She studied it.
The mature ones are a different color.
They've got a lot of blood in them.
Oh. She bent to take a good look, wanting to be sure she'd recognize one if she saw it.
I don't see any kind of mouth, but it's got fine hairs. Or maybe they're cilia.
Whatever you call them, they're sticky. Real sticky. And they're the eating part.
How? And why is it dangerous to me? It's too little to eat anything but bugs.
Well, you'd get away, yeah. But you'd have it stuck to you, and the sap would eat away your skin.
She wasn't crazy about drinking now, so she just splashed her face. The water was cold, but her skin tingled with more than the chill.
It's everywhere in this place, isn't it?
What?
Gan plopped down on the bare rock next to the water, sitting in the tilted sprawl its tail necessitated.
Magic. Not literally everywhere, but there are patches of it all over. The ground, the air, the water.
Sometimes as she walked, she'd felt it drift by like a breeze, only the air wasn't moving. Just the magic. That was different, wasn't it? She felt sure she wasn't used to having so much free magic floating around.
You mean you can feel it? You're not even trying and you feel it?
Of course. There's nothing between my skin and everything else, and I'm a sensitive, remember?
Better than you do, I bet. Unless you found your missing marbles.
Not exactly crammed with tact, are you?
Rule stood and came over to her, rubbing his head along her hip. She dropped a hand to his shoulder, and just like that, she felt better. Easier, as if she'd been holding an immaterial fist clenched around some thought or fear for a long time and could finally relax. She looked at Rule.
I've gotten a little of it back. Nothing about me, but I remember a place that isn't like this.
Lily looked to Gan for a translation.
He says he'll remember for you. Could you try to be quiet now, or do you just have to attract an urchant or two?
I think that Gan gets especially cautious about noise when it doesn't want to answer questions.
The wolf nodded.
I have a lot of questions, and you probably do too. But maybe we'll save them until we've rested.
Not that she was physically tired, though it would feel good to get off her feet. She was weary of questions, of the void inside her that gave back only silence.
I'll grill Gan later. I need to sit, and you need some sleep.
She sat beside Rule. His body felt warm and furry and good. She stroked his back.
Go on, get some sleep. I'll keep watch.
Again he hesitated.
Not used to letting someone else do the watching, are you? It's true, I won't be as good a sentry as you. I don't have your senses. But I don't need sleep right now, and you do.
He laid his head on her thigh. Within moments, he was asleep. This, too, felt good. He'd been angry with her earlier, she knew. He hadn't wanted her to take the emu, or for them to leave the ravine. But either he'd gotten over his anger, or he'd set it aside. He trusted her to keep watch while he slept. And that mattered. It mattered a lot.
I'm so glad about you. I'm so damned glad about you.
She dashed a hand across her eyes and turned to Gan, angry. But the demon was paying no attention to her. It was preoccupied with the flying bugs with the shiny wings.
Yeah.
Its hand shot out, closing around one of them.
Gotcha!
She ought to appreciate Gan's presence, too. True, the demon acted from self-interest, but it healed her wounds. Gan popped the bug in its mouth. Its habits weren't exactly appealing, but she and the wolf would find it much harder to survive here without the demon's guidance. It grabbed another bug. This one it fed to the snake vine. It obviously enjoyed watching the bug thrash in its death throes. There was a reason she hadn't bonded with Gan. She looked away. Sitting still was hard. She'd wanted to rest, but now that she was resting, she wanted to move. She'd thought the restlessness would go away once they left the ravine, but she brought it along with her. She brought another feeling with her, too, one that fed the restlessness, though she sensed it wasn't the cause. An achy, needy feeling. She wanted sex. Now that she was sitting still, the ache was obvious. But she'd felt it for some time without paying it much notice. Ever since Gan gave her the emu, she realized. She remembered the startling rush of strength and energy, as if her blood had gone from flat to fizzy in an instant. She wished she could remember. Funny. She knew about sex, knew what her body wanted. She could imagine the way a man's hands would feel, but she couldn't remember being touched. Or marriage? What if she was married? She looked at the wolf, whose head was heavy and warm on her thigh, her brow wrinkling at the thoughts pinging through her mind. She wasn't wearing a ring, but she'd arrived here without clothes, so the lack of a ring didn't mean much. She didn't realize she'd reached for the little charm hung around her neck until her fingers closed around it. The faint, familiar buzz of its magic made her shoulders loosen. Her necklace arrived with her. Surely a wedding ring would have two.
This is boring.
What?
Aren't you bored just sitting there?
It was like a child, she realized. A nasty little child who pulled the wings off flies and fed them to carnivorous plants.
Shh!
Gan grimaced and pulled up a handful of the fleshy yellow grass. She bet that once she started asking questions, it would be hushing her and looking scared again. But they weren't budging until she knew more. Before they crossed the zone into the other region, she intended to get some answers. What was that? She turned her head sharply and shook the wolf's shoulder.
Wake up! Quick! Gan, what are those?
What are... Shit!
Four great winged shapes circled, turning back toward the little group, coming from the direction of the zone.
Shit, shit, shit! I knew stopping here was a bad idea! I just knew it!
The wolf was on his feet now, but he no more knew what to do than she did. She was on her feet. She didn't remember standing up. She watched as the great creatures of legend folded their wings and dove. Then the talons closed around her. Cinna hated hospitals. So did everyone who didn't work in one, she supposed. And maybe some who did. Just the smell of this one made her want to turn around and head the other way. It was typical hospital fare. semi-private, no window, two stiff vinyl-covered chairs for visitors. No one was in the other bed. No flowers, Cinna noticed. Well, Lily hadn't been here long and would probably be turned loose soon. If they didn't decide to lock her away somewhere else, that is. Someplace where she could be medicated and watched. Lily didn't look bad. Pale, tired, and all over tense, but otherwise okay. Not noticeably nutty. Not grieving either, from what Cinna could tell. But she had her face closed up tight, so Cinna might have been wrong about that. Lily lifted a hand.
TJ, this is Agent Cinna Weaver. Cinna, this quivering mass of jello, is Detective Thomas James. I worked homicide with him.
He grinned, revealing a gold tooth and more charm than she'd expected from an old fat white dude.
Make it TJ. Only civilians call me Detective James.
Sure, if you call me Cinna. When I hear Agent Weaver, I start looking for some suit with a briefcase.
I hear you. Good to meet you, Cinna.
He glanced at Lily.
Guess I'll be heading out.
Don't rush off on my account.
I was ready to leave. You here has already heard all my stories, and the strain of trying to look interested is wearing her out.
TJ, thanks.
Still think you ought to come back, but I'll admit we can't offer you all the thrills you're getting with the feds. Shot, burned. Think you could arrange to be stabbed next time just for a little variety?
I'll see what I can do.
Cinna moved aside to let him by.
Did the ponytail nurse give you a hard time about showing up before visiting hours?
You mean Sally?
There was a knowing look in his eyes.
Nah, Sally likes me. Cute little thing, isn't she?
Not my type.
Never know these days. Later.
Cinna wasn't sure what it was about her that gave people the idea she played on her own side of the fence. But this wasn't the first time she'd run up against that notion. Not just from men, either. She'd been hit on plenty by the DC types of her own sex. After the door closed behind TJ, Cinna turned to Lily.
Maybe you need to wear a button. Something discreet, like, no, I'm not a lesbian.
The door opened again.
And I, for one, am pleased to hear it. Do you fool around?
Cinna turned around and fell in love.
You must be Lily's finder. I've been wanting to meet you.
I am so shallow. Listen, about fooling around. I've got some things to do first, but if you'd like to wait until after I've talked to you, to Lily, I mean, I'm up for a discussion of the subject.
Should I tell you who he is before you jump him, or would that detract from the mystery?
I got this theory that it's classier to know a man's name before you get naked together, so shoot.
Cullen Seaborn.
Shit. She should have known he was too good to be true. The sorcerer. Her right hand was still full of flowers, so she used the left one to run a quick diagnostic, barely moving her fingers. He noticed. It amused him.
Thank you. I'm afraid I haven't rediscovered the trick to creating a full mobile illusion, however. Nor am I running any charm spells.
He really does look like that. As for charm, I haven't noticed any.
Ouch.
He came farther into the room, and oh man, but he did know how to move. And his face. God, what a face. She could have hung him on the wall and just looked at him all day. After they had sex, that is. Hot, sweaty sex for maybe 5-6 hours.
Wait a minute. You aren't gay, are you?
His eyebrows lifted.
Didn't Lily tell you? I'm lupus.
And that, of course, was that. Lupi simply didn't produce homosexuals. The so-called experts coughed up all sorts of reasons, but Cinna considered an argument in favor of a genetic link for sexual orientation.
Oh, and I'm very glad to meet you. Cinna Weaver.
She held out her hand and saw the flowers she was still clutching. She turned to Lily.
These are for you.
Thank you. I'm afraid I don't have a vase, but there should be a water pitcher around here somewhere.
Yeah, that'll do.
She looked around.
Here.
The love of her life handed her an ugly plastic pitcher, and she dropped the flowers in the remaining water.
Great, thanks.
Lily looked at Cullen.
Benedict?
He's hanging in there. Beth was treated and released, I understand. She's okay?
As far as I know, Mother said Beth will be staying with her and my father for a few days.
What about you? Any change?
Lily shook her head. The gorgeous Cullen didn't even notice her, intent on Lily and his questions.
Did they find the tall toy?
No.
What's a toll toy?
A charm. Her necklace got broken during the fight.
Easy to see how that could happen.
Harder to see why Cullen was so tense about a missing bauble. He was a sorcerer, though. Maybe he meant charm literally.
Change in what?
What do you mean?
You asked her if there was any change.
I wanted to know if she felt better.
Uh-uh. You're good, but I'm not buying. I'm here because Lily is about to get dumped on, and I don't like that. But I don't like being kept in the dark either, and that happened right from the start.
The other two didn't exchange telling glances, but their silence said plenty.
Who's about to dump on Lily?
Have you seen the headlines?
Some of them.
Well, they aren't exactly good PR for any of us.
The stories in the more respectable media ranged from gang slaughtered in FBI bust to wolves on the rampage. Cinna's favorite tabloid had the FBI signing a demonic pact to wipe out all gangs, with the Lupi acting as the demon's hitmen. Talk radio was going with pretty much the same slant, only without the demonic middlemen.
They were bound to be all over this one. 14 people killed, the Lupi implicated, the FBI definitely involved. Have they picked up on the death magic angle?
The Times mentions it, references an anonymous source on the San Diego PD.
It's a reporter's wet dream, even if they don't yet know just what went down.
They will soon. The Big Dick has scheduled a press conference for 6 p.m. Eastern, just in time for the evening news.
Dick Hayes was the FBI's acting director while the real boss recuperated from open-heart surgery. The nickname given him by the rank and file was not a token of fondness.
He's gonna throw you to the wolves.
No throwing required. I'm pretty much with the wolves already. Thanks for the warning, though.
No, I don't think you get it. He's gonna give them your name and tell them you're scheduled for psychiatric evaluation. They'll be all over you. Plus, he's got this idea you faked your gift to get in the unit. As if that... You aren't upset.
I'm not happy, but it was only a matter of time before the media got my name. It was my investigation. Besides, I'm an easy sacrifice, considering how short a time I've been with the Bureau. The psych evaluation is news, but it's not a big surprise.
He ordered Reuben not to tell you. I can't believe Reuben agreed, but he did.
I don't imagine he had much choice. He made sure I learned about it.
I guess he figured I'd tell you.
I guess he did.
Cinna decided to sit down. The chair was as uncomfortable as it looked.
Hayes wants you to be surprised so you'll look bad on camera.
I'll have to talk to the press at some point, but maybe not yet. Maybe I should check out of here.
She looked at Cullen.
Eisen called a couple of hours ago.
Oh?
He wants me to see the Reg, though it sounded more like he was passing on a summons from her.
Cullen's eyebrows lifted.
Who or what is the Reg?
A holy woman. I wonder.
He shook his head, apparently unwilling to say more.
He also wants me to come stay with him for a while. He was very gentle, very careful with me. Didn't believe me for a minute about Rule.
You wouldn't be bothered by reporters at Clanholm.
No. I'm going to tell Cinna.
Lily?
About my gift.
She turned to Cinna.
It's gone.
Can't be.
That's conventional wisdom. It's impossible to lose a gift, right? But I can't touch magic now. Even so, I know Rule didn't die.
Reuben told me you're insisting that he's alive. I want to know why.
If I tell you...
Lily!
If I tell you what you want to know, will you try to find him?
I already have.
Lily's head went light and dizzy.
Ugh.
Big Dick's planned press conference hadn't come as a shock, but the whiff of hope hit her system like a double scotch on an empty stomach.
Hey, it helps if you keep breathing.
Okay, I'm okay. Where is he?
Cinna held up both hands.
Oh, I did that wrong. Sorry. What I meant is that I tried, not that I found him. What I did find doesn't make sense. That's why I need to know why you're so sure he's alive.
Lily realized her nails were about to draw blood. She unclenched her fists.
All right. Then you'll tell me what you found.
As a clan member in good standing, this is where I'm supposed to threaten you with all manner of dire consequences.
What can they do? Kick me out? Sorry, I know that's a big deal for you, but it doesn't mean as much to me.
Let me help.
Cinna popped to her feet and began to pace.
I've got some of it figured out. I came up with three possible reasons for you to hold out on me. One, there's some kind of national security deal involved that I'm not cleared for, except you'd tell me if that were the case, right? Or Reuben would have told me before I got here.
That's not it.
I didn't think so. Reason two, the stuff you've kept to yourself is personally embarrassing. People do that all the time, and cops aren't immune to the cover-up urge. But a good cop wouldn't do it, and Reuben has pretty high standards for the unit. Rule standards weren't so shabby either. So that leaves me with reason number three.
She glanced at Cullen.
Which you pretty much confirmed just now with that clan member in good standing bit.
Did I?
I'm wondering if that was on purpose.
Lily didn't wonder. She wasn't sure of his motives, but Cullen gave away very little by accident.
Go on.
It's Lupus secrets you're keeping, isn't it? And it has something to do with your relationship with Rule. Something that makes you think you've got the inside track on whether he's dead or alive. Something that makes him, well, yours.
Lily nodded slowly. She'd underestimated Cinna Weaver.
You've got most of it. Rule and I are mate-bound.
Cullen plopped down in one of the chairs, stretching out his legs and tilting his head back.
I wonder if I'll be considered an accomplice for not stopping you.
You couldn't have.
So, wait, what does mate-bound mean, exactly?
It's rare, I understand.
And harder than she'd expected to put into words, especially with this woman she didn't know well, whom Rule had once known very well.
Lupi see the bond in religious terms. They say their goddess, they call her the Lady, occasionally chooses a life mate for one of them. And, it's very physical. Sexual, but more than that. When it first hit, Rule and I couldn't be separated by more than a couple hundred yards. It's more relaxed now, thank God.
Wait, what do you mean you couldn't be separated?
If we put too much distance between us, we get dizzy. I'm told that if we get too far away, we'd pass out, but we've never gone past the dizzy stage.
Cinna's lips pursed. She glanced at Cullen.
Don't look at me. I'm an innocent bystander.
Rule says the separation thing never goes away completely, but I don't know what our limit is now. I haven't tested it lately, but...
The mate bond was like background music, she thought. If the radio was always playing, she didn't notice unless she stopped and paid attention. But let someone change the station or the volume.
What is it?
He's moving again. Moving fast.
What do you mean again?
He's been moving for some time, but slowly. Now, he might be in a car or something because he's going a lot faster.
Can you guess at the distance? Are you likely to pass out or something?
I don't know. He's farther away now than he has been since the bond happened. And the farther away he is, the fuzzier my estimate of distance. Direction, though, I get that right every time.
That sounds a lot like finding.
What do you mean?
Well, the farther away my target is, the less I can say about the distance. There's a limit, too. For me, it's between 100 and 150 miles. Within that limit, I get direction. Beyond it...
You don't just find physical objects, though. You said you turned up ghosts sometimes.
Yeah, that's sort of what it was like when I tried finding Rule.
He is not a ghost. The mate bond ties me to his body, which is very much alive. What exactly did you find?
I went to the scene this morning after I talked to Reuben, and I did a find. I, already had Rule's pattern from when I used to know him. It's better to have a current pattern, but I thought I had enough that I'd be able to tell if he was still around.
And?
What I got was fuzzy. Real fuzzy. I didn't think it was a ghost, but it's hard to be sure when I had such a poor fix. But there was a direction, so I followed it. Right where my gift told me he was, though... It was a gas station. Lots of cars, no sign of Rule.
Her heart was pounding. Cinna had gotten the same results she had. A clear fix on a specific spot, yet no sign of Rule. That proved she wasn't crazy and that the mate bond was working right, didn't it?
Has that ever happened before?
Cinna shook her head.
Except with ghosts.
Ghosts don't move around. Where was this gas station, and what time did you do the find?
The corner of Middlebrook and Hessing. I got there about 9:30.
Lily leaned over and pulled her table closer, took the city map off it, and passed it to Cullen.
Check my notes. I've been trying to track Rule. I had to guess at the distance, but the direction is right.
He unfolded it, studied it a moment, and then passed it to Cinna.
Where... Oh, yeah, I see it. Maybe you're better at guessing distance than you thought. The line connecting your estimates runs pretty close to my gas station. The times fit, too.
Yes.
She looked at Cullen, who was back to studying the ceiling.
Rule's people might expect me to be weird right now. I gather that the sudden breaking of the mate bond can have repercussions, but only if you start with the assumption that he's dead. And I can't see why you've done that.
That was one hell of a fascinating ceiling.
There's no body. The staff wasn't even touching Rule when you crisped Harlow, so why assume he's dead? And now Cinna has confirmed that the mate bond is working. She and I both know where he is, only he isn't there. I only see one possibility. He's someplace that's tied to Earth geographically, but isn't Earth.
I've tried. Haven't I tried? But she's determined, and maybe Aizen is wrong. No, strike that. Aizen is definitely wrong.
Abruptly, he pushes to his feet.
Being Ro isn't like being the Pope, is it? No one granted him infallibility.
What are you talking about?
He began pacing. There wasn't much room for it.
Cast your mind back. I didn't say Rule was dead. At the time, you weren't in any shape to consider nuances of speech, but what I said was that he was gone.
So you don't think he's dead either?
He might be. I don't know. Aizen wants me to lie to you about that, and I could. I'm an excellent liar, but my heart isn't in it. And I'm not good at blind obedience. Lost the knack, I suppose, in all those years I was clanless.
Cullen stopped. Tilting his head back, he closed his eyes.
God, I'm tired.
Tough. Keep talking.
You're right. Right about all of it, I'm afraid.
So why would this Aizen dude want you to lie about it?
Cullen glanced at her.
Aizen Turner. He's Rule's father and the Ro, the head of Nokolai. My clan. He wants to protect Lily.
To protect me? By trying to convince me Rule's dead?
Think about it.
Cullen's face could never be other than beautiful, but she'd never seen it look so naked. Naked like an old, twisty tree. All bones, no softness. He almost looked his age.
I spent a long time working out the possibilities last night. I'll give them to you the way I gave them to the Ro. One, Rule is dead. Wait.
He held up his hand.
Hear me out. Mage fire burns in places, call them dimensions, you can't see, and it burns very, very hot there. When my mage fire hit the staff, the hole in space that was its underlying reality imploded. It could have sucked Rule along somehow.
Sucked him where?
That's the question, isn't it? Two, the staff was hers. If she called it to her the second the mage fire hit, she might have been able to recover part of it. I don't know why Rule would have been dragged with the staff. As you said, it was touching you, not him, so I didn't give this a very high probability. But it was just possible that the effect traveled along you without, grabbing hold because of your gift. And Rule got taken instead.
One problem with that. My gift is gone.
Exactly. So I thought Rule probably was dead, only you were so damn sure he wasn't. I couldn't overlook the chance that you were right. I tried scrying for him.
You didn't tell me! I take it you didn't find anything.
I had to light the candle with a match. Didn't have enough juice left to raise a fever, much less start a fire. I struck out.
I didn't.
Cullen gave Cinna an unfriendly look.
No. So I've had to rethink some of my assumptions.
I don't see what any of this has to do with lying to me to protect me.
Cullen held out both hands, turning them palms up.
The way Aizen saw it, either Rule was dead and you were delusional and feeding that delusion wouldn't be healthy, or else he was alive and we'd have to find a way of going after him. Of course, I don't know how to do that, but assuming we made it past that little roadblock, it was apt to be a suicide mission, so...
Wait a minute. You sound as if you know where he is.
I thought you'd figured that out. You said you knew he was in the realm most analogous to ours physically.
I don't know what that means!
Hell, love. He's in hell.
Cinna frowned at Cullen.
No, I don't buy it. Not as a sure thing, anyway. Too many assumptions.
Cullen gave his eyebrows a little lift. God, the man even had gorgeous eyebrows. Life wasn't fair.
Or else you don't know everything I do. That seems possible.
Tie a knot in your ego for a minute, will you? Look at all the big, fat maybes you've stacked up. First, we have to assume that hell actually is the closest physical analog to Earth, but some say that's fairy.
They're wrong.
I suppose you've checked that out personally.
No, I had it from Ni Orinieth. I think you'll agree, he ought to know.
I might, if you tell me who Ni Orinieth is.
One of the lords of fairy, if I've got the naming conventions right. You trust this information? I mean, the fae are supposed to have a pretty playful attitude toward the truth.
In this case, I do. There was a debt.
Okay, so if Rule's in hell, how the hell did he get there?
I covered that. She's in hell, and...
Not established.
It's an assumption, but backed by fact. Things that happened before you showed up. Somehow, Rule must have been dragged along when she retrieved what was left of the staff.
Now, too many maybes. Why not go for the simpler explanation?
And that would be?
Demon transfer. Well, there was a demon, wasn't there? Trying its damnedest to possess Lily? Not that anyone but her saw it, but...
I saw it. Not with regular vision, but it was there.
Okay, so that's confirmed. Now, I don't know why the demon would grab Rule when it had been targeting Lily, but it's still a simpler explanation, isn't it?
It might be if I had any idea what demon transfer meant.
Oh.
Cinna glanced at Cullen, her eyes widening, then narrowing as she grinned.
You don't know either, do you? God, how about that? I know something the hotshot sorcerer doesn't.
Would you care to share your vast knowledge?
Put simply, demon transfer is when a demon takes something with it when it moves between realms.
Demons can't move freely between the realms any more than we can. That's why the hell gates were closed at the Purge, to keep the demons out. Seems to have worked.
Yes, but...
I haven't noticed any demon hordes ravaging the countryside, have you?
Will you listen a minute? You may know all sorts of fancy spellcraft, but that's not demonology. Demons vary a lot more than people do.
Six-year-olds who watch Saturday morning cartoons know that much.
Maybe they don't know that some demons can cross unsummoned and without a hellgate. Or maybe you should watch more Saturday morning cartoons.
You know this for a fact.
I do. They can carry stuff with them, too.
Stuff? Does that include people?
Well, I have to, do a little research to find out for sure, but I think so.
Research she was not eager to attempt.
What kind of research?
Your explanation requires a few big, fat maybes as well. Maybe this particular demon can cross unsummoned. Maybe demon transfer works on people as well as objects. Maybe it decided to take Rule along instead of Lily. Maybe...
The demon was here, so obviously it did cross. If you'd get your big, fat ego out of the way...
This isn't about ego. We have to look at the facts, which you're confusing with opinions. The demon...
Shut up!
Cinna turned to her, surprised. The China doll looked like she was trying to stuff all sorts of messy emotions back down.
I don't care who knows more than who. I don't care who wins your little pissing contest, and I don't want to waste time finding out.
Sorry.
It does make a difference how Rule ended up in hell. He's either with what's-her-name or he's with the demon. But in the end, it doesn't matter much. I might as well assume I'll be dealing with a demon. There's no way to plan for an encounter with her.
Shit.
Cullen looked like he was vibrating.
That's what I was afraid of. What Aizen was afraid of. That if you knew where Rule was, you'd try to go after him.
Lily looked at him as if he'd said something really stupid. She kept looking.
All right, I said, I'll help. I'm a double-damned idiot, but I'll help you. For whatever good it will do. I don't know how to open a hellgate. I don't know anyone who does.
Cinna really, really didn't want to say anything, but her mouth made a decision without consulting her brain.
I do.
Who?
Two people, actually. One who does know and one who might be able to figure it out. That's Abel. Abel Kuransky. He can close leaks, and wouldn't this be like doing the same thing in reverse? We don't need a great big gate.
His eyes narrowed as if he was totting things up mentally.
It might work, if he's capable of creative thought. Spells don't reverse neatly.
No, duh.
No, Kuransky would be last ditch. Aside from the fact that he's in Virginia, he's not going to agree. Opening a hellgate is illegal. Who's the other person?
No one I want to talk to if I can avoid it. She, probably wouldn't be happy about me tracking her down, and she might not want to help anyway. And if she did, it would come with a price.
For a few minutes, none of them spoke. Lily had herself back under control. Cinna couldn't read a thing on that pretty face as she sat there, one finger tapping against her thigh.
Oh, I need to get out of here. I guess the things I was wearing are around here somewhere.
I think your chums collected them as evidence. Evidence of what? I'm not sure, but they have a passion for plastic baggies.
She grimaced.
There's a gift shop downstairs, isn't there? Would you see if...
No, no need. I've got that covered. Only, where... Oh, yeah.
She went to the door where she'd dropped her tote. She snatched it, unzipped it, and pulled out a wrinkled t-shirt and pants.
They won't fit, but they're better than nothing.
For the first time, Lily smiled. It wasn't much, but it was a smile.
You came prepared to bust me out.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, here, you'll need this to hold them up.
She pulled out her belt. Unlike the rest of the outfit, it was neatly folded.
A brown belt? Judo? With those long legs, you'd be good at it.
Judo is mostly defense. I've been told I'm offensive. Taekwondo. I don't practice enough.
Brown's nothing to apologize for.
She swung her legs to the side of the bed, managing to keep it modest in spite of the hospital gown's shortcomings.
You do judo, don't you?
Lily nodded. She was so short her feet didn't quite reach the floor, so she had to slide off the bed.
What belt?
Black, second dan. I'll be right back.
She padded barefoot for the tiny bathroom, the mismatched clothes over her arm. She moved slowly as if she hurt, but Sinna was pretty sure an offer of help would get her snapped at. Huge eyes blinked. Lily came back to herself with a jolt, knowing time had passed. How much? She didn't know. Seconds? A day? Never mind. She scrambled to her feet, moving because she could. Because whatever happened, she wanted to meet it on her feet. She put out a hand. Rule was there. Without having to look, she'd known that he'd come up beside her. She rested her hand on his back. Had he been trapped by the dragon's gaze, too?
The Lupus didn't look into my eyes. The demon knew better, but did it anyway.
The dragon hadn't spoken. Those great jaws hadn't opened, or the mouth moved. The words had just appeared in her mind, sharp as glass. Thoughts, but not her thoughts. But that was impossible. She was a sensitive. Magic couldn't...
Yet I can. I am dragon.
With those words came a sense of something beyond arrogance. Power, perhaps. A vast, knowing power.
Vocalize. Your thoughts are mush. Forcing them into the sort of speech you are accustomed to gives them a small degree of clarity.
Are we conversing then?
Rather than dining, you mean? When I hunger, I hunt. I don't have dinner fetched.
Why did you have us fetched?
Utility. Politics. Curiosity.
The great head lowered in a graceful arc. Lily jumped back. Her bad ankle gave out, dumping her ingloriously on her butt. Rule didn't move, but his fur bristled. The movement didn't signal a change of mind about the dragon's dinner plans. It seemed to be settling in for a chat. It rested its head on its tail like a cat curling up for a nap, leaving the three of them entirely circled by dragon. That long body gave off so much heat it warmed the sand.
That didn't really answer my question. Why did you bring us here?
It has been many moons since I've seen a human. And never have I seen one linked to both a Lupus and a demon. Most curious. How did you become half-souled?
If you mean how did I lose my memory, I don't remember.
Those eyes blinked again.
Ah, you didn't know.
Its gaze shifted to the quivering lump of demon 15 feet away.
Your demon didn't tell you.
Not my demon. A demon. Not mine.
Rule's head swung toward her, as if she'd surprised him. Then he looked at Gan.
Don't listen to the dragon!
Gan's attempt at bravado was canceled by the way it crouched with both arms over its head, as if that would protect it from the dragon's jaws.
He doesn't know anything about it. Besides, he can lie. I can't. Who are you gonna believe?
You lie all the time.
No, I don't. I can't lie. Everyone knows what I mean, even if I say something else. That's how it works.
You may not tell out-and-out whoppers, but you lie by misdirection. Not all that well, actually, because you've never learned to manage your face. Maybe demons aren't used to reading expressions for clues because you all pick up on each other's meanings. By picking your words carefully, though, you can mean what you say and still be lying.
Clever, small bite. Demons prize the ability to deceive without lying. They do this by watching their words, as you say, and also by finding a self who means what they wish to say. This little one you call Gan doesn't have many selves, so it must rely primarily upon its choice of words.
Lily rubbed her temples. Not many selves?
Vocalize.
What does many selves mean?
Demons consist of all the creatures they have eaten. Those eaten lose volition, not identity.
So Gan isn't one demon? It's a whole bunch of them, but Gan's the one in charge?
Gan is mostly imps, bugs, and other nonsentients. Though I do hear at least one surprisingly old demon inside it. Gan is also Gan. demon identity is not what you are used to.
The dragon turned his gaze on the little demon.
You will now tell me why the human is half-souled.
Oh, great one, mighty of wing and mind. How would this feeble one know? I'm a demon, and such a small, insignificant demon, barely more than an imp. What do I know about souls?
You are right, Smallbite. The demon does not deceive well, though the din of its mind makes it difficult to sort through what passes for its thoughts.
The dragon's tail flicked out suddenly.
I have all your surface names and 32 of the deeper ones. Must I torment you with them?
All right, don't say it all!
What happened to the human?
I just wanted to get away. When that mage fire hit the staff, it hurt. I can cross all by myself. Hardly anyone can do that, but I can. But I was already tied to Lily Yu, so when I crossed, she came too. And she's tied to the wolf in some weird way, so he got dragged along and everything went wrong.
You mean you did it? You brought us here, not the staff?
Yes.
Then you can take us back.
No, I can't.
Rule lowered his head.
I tried! You think I'd rather be eaten by dragons than go back to Earth? Well, they didn't eat us, but I thought they would, so I tried to cross. I tried and tried, but I couldn't.
Because Lily Yu did not come along completely. When you tried to possess her, you became partially lodged inside her. You brought that part with you, but left behind the named half. She is both here and there. The effect is rather as if you jammed something against a door. It won't open for you.
I'm missing more than memories? Are you sure?
The dragon flicked her a glance.
I do not say what I am not sure of. I wonder if your other half is a ghost. Neither of your sundered selves will live long, of course, but it would be interesting to...
Before the demon's roundhouse swing could connect, Rule was circling for another leap. The dragon's tail smashed into him midair.
No!
Lily stumbled over to him. He wasn't moving.
Foolish. I had expected better. He seemed to have some sense.
Shut up!
His heart was beating, she discovered when she pressed her hand to the bottom of his rib cage. But his ribs had already been cracked or broken. The lashing tail could have staved them in, punctured a lung.
I guess you don't care that I'm bleeding over here?
No, she didn't. The demon was alive and talking while Rule... Wait, his eyelids twitched. Then they blinked open.
Where are you hurt?
Slowly, he lifted his head. With his nose, he indicated his left foreleg. Not his gut or his chest, then. Not a punctured lung.
A minor concussion as well, he thinks. But the leg is more of a problem. You will need to set it.
Okay. She drew in a breath and ran her hand along the leg.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She'd learned what she needed to know, though. Her fingertips glistened red.
There's a bit of bone sticking out through the skin. It needs to be set, splinted. I don't know how to do it.
She looked at her hands. They were shaking. But that made sense. She was dying. She had memories of only a couple days of life, and she was dying.
Such drama. You aren't dying yet.
You said...
I was interrupted. You'll die of your condition eventually, but the demon is keeping you alive for now.
She looked at Gan. It sat in the sand, scowling. A chunk of flesh and muscle was missing where its shoulder met its neck. The wound seemed to have already stopped bleeding, but its orange skin was heavily splashed with blood. Red blood like hers. Rule had really meant to kill Gan.
You're keeping me alive?
Why do you think I made you take Emu? He needs me too!
Gan gave the dragon a wary glance.
To keep you alive! He probably plans to trade you to Zithil. If dragons aren't eating demons, they're trying to get more territory from us.
She turned to the dragon.
Is that what you wanted me for? To trade?
Perhaps. The demon is correct about my desire to keep you alive. If your wolf had been thinking, he would have realized that. Why else would I suffer having a demon brought here?
Rule lifted his head and looked straight at the dragon.
You would question me, wolf?
What did he say, or think, or whatever?
He wonders why I'm here at all. Why dragons are living with demons.
Living with us? Eating us, more like, when you can. Trying to get more territory the rest of the time.
Gan looked at Lily.
No one knows why the dragons left Earth. I was just an imp when some of them showed up here. But even imps heard about the battles. Dragons live by magic, see, but they can't be affected by it. That was their big advantage. Well, they're good fighters, too, but we outnumbered them thousands to one. But
you did not unite to attack us, allowing us to prevail over the local lord and his court. Nor did you learn from this. When Zitil allowed Ishtar's enemy to guest with her, the other lords should have banded together and destroyed them both. They never even considered it. This was folly of a monstrous degree.
Big wars are wasteful, unpredictable. Zitil will destroy the Avatar.
I am unsurprised by your attitude.
Ishtar's enemy? Hadn't Gan used that name too? Lily shook her head.
Look, all that is interesting, but the timing's bad for history lessons. I need something straight to use for a splint and something to fasten it with. Cloth, rope, leather. Something I can tie around the leg and splint. And if you know anything about setting bones, I could use some help with that.
That great head turned, focusing on Gan.
The demon's kind are good with bodies.
I'm not gonna help him. He tried to kill me.
You will do as I wish, lest I maim you.
Right. But do you mean you want the wolf's leg fixed?
I do.
I can put his bone back in place, but it won't stay. He's no demon. He can't heal that quick.
That's what the splint is for.
The dragon had broken Rule's leg, but now wanted it to heal straight? Lily didn't understand. Were dragons capable of compassion?
We have to stabilize the leg.
The dragon tilted his head up. After a moment, one of the circling shapes overhead broke from the rest, diving for the land at the top of the cliff.
We are well supplied with bones. One of my line kin will bring you an assortment to choose from for the splint. There are coverings in your cave. Tear strips from one, or have the demon do so. It has good teeth.
My cave?
The place you will stay. The entrance is near the grass at the eastern end of the beach.
With that, he stood. The dragon's legs were short and thick in proportion to his body, bowed out like a lizard's. His haunches were house high, his shoulders slightly lower.
There is food in the cave. You won't need it, but the lupus will. At the rear of the cave is a small freshwater spring.
I need food too. I can't eat dead things.
You'll be fed. You'll continue to feed the human. Drop to the ground now.
A creature so large should have seemed ponderous. He wasn't. Lily had to flatten herself to avoid getting clipped by his tail when he started walking, but the wide-set legs carried him over the sand as agilely as one of his tiny kin.
Wait, where are you going? When will you be back?
The dragon flowed over the side of the sandbox, stepping down the 20 feet to the beach like a cat oozing off a couch.
What's your name?
He just kept moving.
How did you know we were in that other region? How did you know I'm a sensitive before you brought us here? Why did you bring us here?
The great beast was a good distance down the beach now.
Damn it, I'm vocalizing it, you!
He stopped. His wings partially unfurled. They were doubled, those wings, like a moth's. Slowly, the neck swung around until he was looking at her. Faint. So faint she might have imagined it. She caught a wisp of amusement just before he straightened, rising up on his hind legs, the long body lifting up and up. The haunches bunched and he sprang for the sky like a cat leaping onto a windowsill. Even from this distance, the wind from his wings stirred the sand, getting grit in her eyes. She was blinking them clean when she caught his last words.
Sam, I believe you may call me Sam.
Lily was scared. All the way down scared. Not so much of dying, though she wasn't in denial about that. Death was a strong possibility, but she knew how to keep going in the face of that sort of risk. What was grinding at her wasn't as clean as the fear of death. The shaky feeling came from the fear that she wasn't enough. She didn't know enough, couldn't be enough or do enough to get Rule back. Her gift was gone. She wasn't sure there was enough of her left to do what had to be done. Maybe even with her gift, there wouldn't have been enough. What they were planning, or so far failing to plan, was nuts. One lupus sorcerer, one female finder, and one damaged former homicide cop were going up against who knew how many demons on their home ground. How do you plan for that? Riding next to Cullen in the front seat of his Bronco, Cinna shook her head.
You don't know what you're talking about. There's no technical difference between opening a big gate and opening a little one. It's just a matter of power.
They should have taken Cinna's rental. The Bronco's engine knocked so badly, she wondered if Cullen kept it running with sorcery. But Cullen insisted on driving, and Cinna wouldn't let him behind the wheel of her vehicle. Even one only temporarily hers.
I don't imagine you've ever heard of McCallum's theorem.
He's got a theory about hell gates?
No, it concerns the difference between relevance and resonance, but it suggests that
there's only one kind of relevance that matters with gates. Now, if we're talking about voodoo...
Pretend you're more interested in figuring this out than one-upping me. You won't embarrass yourself so much.
Lily wondered if she was going to have to kill them both, or if taping their mouths shut would be enough.
Bickering is one way of dealing with tension, but it isn't doing much for mine. Since neither one of you knows how to open a gate, can we talk about something more to the point? Make some plans?
Believe it or not, our discussion is very much to the point. In a roundabout way.
Sure, right. Now I understand.
We're trying to settle what kind of gate to open. Single relevance or multi-relevance? Only there isn't such thing as a multi-relevance gate, so you're right, we're wasting time.
Then let's stop wasting our time and figure out how to get rule.
Cullen slowed. They'd reached her apartment complex.
All right, then. Five fields of relevance. Spatial, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. The more fields we use, the more stable the gate and the greater our control.
Theoretically.
The mate bond gives us two more fields to use. Physical and emotional.
I see, sort of. Because Rule's there and I'm here, the mate bond is already sort of a gate. But once I'm there too, that won't be true.
That's why you need me.
Cullen pulled into the space next to Lily's car.
To figure out the hard parts. If I get it right, the gate will close behind us as soon as we cross. It will open again when you want it to, and nothing will be able to pass through it without your permission.
What happens if I'm killed?
Try to avoid that.
He shut off the engine and opened his door.
It's a damned good way of keeping the other side from making use of our gate, though, isn't it?
5 minutes later, Lily sat in her one and only chair, petting Dirty Harry, who had his motor going full blast. The cat claimed her lap when the man who'd been keeping him company, Abel Karonsky, stood up.
I'd offer you a sandwich, but Harry and I ate the last of your ham.
Why does everyone feel entitled to break into my place?
Karonsky looked around vaguely as if her place might have sprouted another chair. His gaze paused on Cullen.
Seaborn, we met at your, adoption ceremony. When you joined Nokolai, I mean.
I remember.
At the risk of repeating myself, what are you doing here?
I'm not really here. Think of me as a figment of your overheated imaginations.
Nothing personal, Abel, but you've never figured high on my overheated imagination. Here, sit down and give those old bones a rest.
Mouthy. Always mouthy. I'm only 10 years older than you.
He looked at Lily.
You're not looking so great.
Neither are you.
The pouches under his eyes looked more like duffel bags.
Tired, that's all. We found the leak, and it's big. Biggest I've ever seen. I've called a gathering to close it.
A gathering?
Multiple covens. Anywhere from 3 to 12. That's a major working you're talking about.
It's a major leak.
He lowered himself awkwardly onto the cushion and then scowled at Lily.
I don't know why you don't own chairs. Everyone owns chairs.
My figments have never complained about the seating before, or helped themselves to my ham. Maybe you'll explain why I'm imagining you're here.
Officially, I'm still in North Carolina. I'll be flying back as soon as we've talked.
The silence that followed reeked of everything he didn't say.
I'm sorry about Rule, Lily. Damn sorry.
She didn't respond. Just waited.
You aren't going to insist that he isn't dead?
I'm pretty sure you know that. Just like I know you didn't fly 2,500 miles to offer me your sympathy.
No. I'm here to tell you some things Reuben didn't want to go into over the phone. Also to be sure you aren't planning to do something stupid.
Reuben's private line is as secure as any in the nation.
So it is. I'm going to give you some background you aren't cleared for. Heavy-duty stuff with lots of tops stamped in front of secret.
He looked at Cullen.
I figure you see the advantage in continuing to fly under the official radar.
Just as you see the advantage in letting me hover there. Don't worry, I'm not going to run to the tabloids with the story.
You won't tell anyone, or discuss it with anyone except those in this room. And you'll all be damn careful how you discuss it at all. You'll see why. In the past year, two U.S. congressmen and the undersecretary of a major department have reported being contacted by a demon.
What? That is certainly not what I was expecting.
Demons didn't just dial up congressmen and offer them deals. For one thing, they couldn't. Or so everyone thought.
There hasn't been a confirmed case of demonic tampering with government in... well, not since Hitler.
And that was a freak occurrence, the result of conditions unlikely to be duplicated in 1,000 years. You can see why they're keeping the investigation quiet.
They, not we? Who's investigating?
The Secret Service. They've needed some expert help, so Reuben's made a few of us in the unit available to them on an informal basis. But it's their investigation, not ours.
Are we talking about one demon or more?
Good question. We'd like to know if we're looking at a widespread change in the relationship between the realms, which is what contact by multiple demons would suggest. Unfortunately, I can't tell you. The descriptions we've got don't match, but demons have a nasty habit of changing their body size and shape, so that isn't conclusive.
And what does this have to do with Lily?
Think about it. If one appointee and three elected officials report unsolicited demonic contact, there's a damn good chance that others were contacted too, and haven't reported it.
Shit. The ones who reported it were taking a risk. Supposedly, demons can't initiate contact themselves, right? They have to be summoned. The congressmen must have wondered if anyone would believe that it wasn't any of their doing.
They showed courage, all right. We're betting that others were contacted who didn't take the deal but didn't report it either.
What kind of deal?
The usual. Fame, wealth, power. The power to do good can be a strong temptation for even the best of us.
But those pacts leave traces. It's not that hard to find out if someone has been sipping demon blood.
Oh, ugh. Is that how the pacts are sealed?
Blood is both the seal and the way power is transferred. And yes, we can detect it. But it's not feasible to run blood tests on every member of Congress, their staffs and families, all the secretaries and undersecretaries, maybe a few dozen judges. And...
Okay, but what is the Secret Service doing then? How do they investigate if they can't run tests?
For a long moment, Karonsky didn't say anything. Then he looked at Lily.
We'd hoped to bring in a sensitive. Someone who could tell us who was clean with a single handshake.
Lily closed her eyes. Shit.
You also didn't fly 2,500 miles to make Lily feel even worse about the loss of her gift, I'm assuming.
He's warning us. He thinks the acting director of the FBI may have been corrupted. That's why Reuben didn't say anything over the phone, why Karonsky is officially still in Virginia, and probably why the Secret Service is investigating, not us.
We've got no evidence. None. No reason to think Hayes was contacted, except...
one of Reuben's feelings.
Yeah. Which was strengthened when Hayes put pressure on Reuben to close the investigation and declare Rule dead.
I'm not getting the connection.
You should. If Hayes is corrupted, and that's a big if, of course, he might have done one of his damned cost-benefit analyses and decided it was cheaper to write off Rule. He could be clean himself, but getting pressure from others who aren't. But if he's corrupted, he didn't make the decision. The demon did.
And this hypothetical demon doesn't want anyone looking for Rule?
Either the demon or the demon's master.
Karonsky looked at Cinna, sympathy softening his eyes.
That makes the most sense, doesn't it? More than assuming the rules have changed. A true master could put a demon in contact with ordinary humans.
You haven't brought me in on it. I'm the one person who could find her, and you haven't brought me in.
Reuben wanted to. The Secret Service refused.
She looked away, and then nodded.
Which brings me to the other reason I'm here. Just in case any of you are thinking of doing something colossally dumb, like crossing into hell without official sanction, you should know that the Secret Service's chief suspect is Jiri Asmahani, Cinna's old teacher. This isn't a good time to renew that acquaintance.
Karonsky left, closing the door on Lily's apartment and Hope. Even if she'd been willing to endanger an investigation into the demonic control of highly placed national officials, there was a chance Cinna's old teacher was behind the official ban on looking for Rule. She wasn't likely to change her mind just because Cinna said pretty please. Karonsky wasn't going to help them open a hellgate. Cullen didn't know how. God, she was tired. She closed her eyes and thought about keeping them closed, just not opening them ever again. She heard Cullen push to his feet and start pacing.
Cinna, is there any chance you could summon the demon who took Rule? Force it to take us to him or bring him back?
No, I don't have enough of its names.
Okay. We've run out of other options.
Other options? As in, you have one I don't know about?
You know about it. Sort of.
He stopped in front of her.
It's a long shot, but the only shot we've got left. You said the Reg wanted to talk to you?
Baffled, she nodded.
That's what you should do then. Go talk to the Reg.
Clanholme. It rested in the mountains outside the city, sprawling over nearly 2,000 acres. They weren't regal, these mountains, like their grander cousins to the north, nor garbed in towering pines. The slopes were steep, but not terribly high. Valleys were mostly narrow, cut by small seasonal streams. This was chaparral country, with scrub oak, juniper, sage, and here and there the tough, ugly mountain mahogany tangled together on the rocky slopes. It was cooler up here, downright nippy compared to sea level. The air smelled of dust and sage. At least, that's what Lily smelled. She didn't know how much more the werewolf in front of her was smelling.
So is this Reg person a bit of a loner? She lives up here away from everyone else.
They were following a narrow path up one of those scrub-covered slopes. Cullen led. Cinna brought up the rear.
Lots of people prefer to live slightly apart. They enjoy the contact with the wild. It doesn't make them loners.
Apart, in this case, meant away from the commons. A loose cluster of homes and small businesses along the only real road in Clanholme. The Reg's home was less distant than some, being only a couple of miles away from the end of the gravel road. But there was a great deal she didn't know about Nokolai and Clanholme. She'd only been here three times. Once when she was investigating a murder, the investigation that brought her and Rule together. The second time she'd come to take part in her Gens Amplexi, the ceremony when she was formally adopted into Nokolai. On her third trip here, a little over a week ago, she'd just visited, trying to get to know some of the people she was now bound to.
You holding up okay?
I'm fine.
Utterly spent, actually, which was mortifying but not unexpected. A wounded body turned tyrant, insisting on channeling everything into healing. But her burn wasn't hurting too badly. Looser clothing helped.
Why didn't I meet the Reg at the Gens Amplexi?
Cullen stopped, though they weren't at the top of the mountain. He glanced over his shoulder at her, a small smile on his mouth.
You did. You just didn't know it.
More secrets. Your bunch is too damned fond of secrets.
The ground leveled out here, forming a small clearing. But many of the plants Lily saw wouldn't have grown on this west-facing slope naturally. Someone had planted them, after digging out the oak and juniper. A huge job that, without earth-moving equipment. Maybe she'd had lupus mussels to help. The house was set smack up against the mountain, a tiny adobe building almost the color of the dirt behind it, but with a shiny metal roof. As Lily's attention left the plants for the house, the front door opened. An old woman swept out a scatter of dust. Lily stared. She recognized her all right, though they hadn't spoken at the ceremony or the celebration that followed. The woman stood maybe 5 feet high, which was enough to make her stick in Lily's memory. She was Anglo, over 60, and fat, the roly-poly happy grandmother kind of fat. Her hair was white and straight and short. It looked like she cut it herself, maybe with hedge trimmers. Her eyes had once been blue. Now they were milky. She was blind. Those sightless eyes aimed right at them.
Welcome in! You didn't hike up here to watch me sweep my floor.
She turned around and went back inside. Lily gave Cullen a hard look.
Secrets.
She headed for the little house. Inside, it was a single square room, its symmetry disturbed only by two bumped-out sections with doors that she guessed were the bathroom and a large closet. To her left was the kitchen area, open shelving above the single wooden counter with a tiny electric stove and a refrigerator straight out of the 50s. To her right stood a round table and four wooden chairs. The bed, a double, hugged the back between the bumped-out portions. Two battered trunks lined up along one wall. Along the opposite wall sat a cushy green recliner, a top-of-the-line stereo, and three large baskets. A gray tabby slept in the recliner. No rugs, white plastered walls, dark wood floor, and an altar. Set smack in the center of the room, the rough-hewn stone held three white candle stubs, a scattering of sage, and a small silver saucer. Chiseled into the front of it was a symbol much like Lily's missing toll toy.